lift your head, we'll be sinners. The river's just a bend. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting there. You build a mighty fortress, 10,000 burdens high. Love is here to lift you up, here to lift you high. If you're lost.
So it is another week, and you know when you hear Chains by David Crowder that it's time to talk about life and hope. So this is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening live at Joy 620, or listening to the archive, listening to the podcast, you can at investinghope.com. You can also find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found, the TuneIn app. Today we have a lot to talk about. Last week we focused on what was going on in Georgia in terms of abortion legislation, restricting abortion, and the heartbeat bill there in Georgia. Well, Alabama came in hot and heavy at the end of the week, and that has been the conversation in the pro-life movement, in the pro-choice movement. That has been all over Twitter. A lot of folks have a lot of opinions about the law out of Alabama. And so what are we going to talk about today? We are going to talk about Alabama. Now, I get it. For those that are locally listening, it's hard for Knoxvillians, for Tennesseans to give praise to the state of Alabama. But I'm just going to prepare you. That is what I'm going to do today, is really hats off and respect to the state of Alabama for having the guts and the boldness to bring forth a piece of legislation that truly is crafted not only to restrict abortion, not only to end abortion, but also crafted to get the judges and the courts to recognize what's going on so that they may, in fact, take up the case of Roe v. Wade. So if you're listening and you're going, I have no idea what you're talking about, what happened in Alabama, let me get you up to speed. So Governor Kay Ivey, and it's important to know that the governor of Alabama is, in fact, a female. So a lot of folks have been arguing and saying that white men gave us this law out of Alabama. Well, the person that carried the piece of legislation, female, and the governor that signed this piece of legislation, also a female. So Governor Kay Ivey on Wednesday of last week signed into law the Alabama Human Life Protection Act after both houses of the Alabama legislature passed House Bill 314. Upon signing the bill, Governor Ivey released the following statement. She said, "Today I signed into law the Alabama Human Life Protection Act, a bill that was approved by overwhelming majorities in both chambers of the legislature. To the bill's many supporters, this legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabamians' deeply held belief that every life is precious and that every life is a sacred gift from God. To all Alabamians, I assure you that we will continue to follow the rule of law. In all meaningful respects, this bill closely resembles an abortion ban that has been part of Alabama law for well over 100 years. As today's bill itself recognizes that long-standing abortion law has been rendered unenforceable as a result of the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade. No matter one's personal view on abortion, we can all recognize that, at least for the short term, this bill may similarly be unenforceable. As citizens of this great country, we must always respect the authority of the U.S. Supreme Court, even when we disagree with their decisions. Many Americans, myself included, the governor is saying, disagreed when Roe v. Wade was handed down in 1973. The sponsors of this bill believe that it is time, once again, for the U.S. Supreme Court to revisit this important matter. And they believe this act may bring about the best opportunity for this to occur. I want to commend the bill sponsors, Representative Terry Collins and Senator Clyde Chambliss, for their strong leadership on this important issue. For the remainder of this session, I now urge all members of the Alabama legislature to continue seeing the best ways possible to foster a better Alabama in all regards, from education to public safety. We must give every person the best chance for a quality of life and a promising future." Okay, so Alabama passes a bill that really was a surprise to a lot of folks. So what you had and what you have really across the board, when conservative legislatures put forth bills that will restrict abortions, typically the language that you see is you'll see something like what we did in Tennessee, the heartbeat bill, or the legislation that ultimately was passed and signed by the governor that says, look, abortion will not be legal in the state of Tennessee if Roe v. Wade is ever overturned. Okay, so typically what you see is pieces of legislation that have some type of compromise, some type of language that says if this goes into effect, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, or this goes into effect only in these cases. You have other folks that'll bring up forth legislation that says abortion is going to be restricted when a heartbeat is present, except for in the instances of rape, incest, or the life of the mother. And so again, you have language in the bill that says we're going to make exceptions and we're going to allow for abortions in certain scenarios, but not in other scenarios. Well, here's what Alabama said. Alabama said there will be no exceptions except for life of the mother. So in those rare cases, which many doctors say are never even a reality, where a mom's life is at stake, the doctors will do everything they can to save a life, and that may in time, in certain situations, be the life of the mother. But what this bill in Alabama did not do is make an exception for rape or incest. Now, some people hear that, and even, frankly, there's some folks on social media over the weekend that claim to be pro-life that said that law is too extreme. Well, that's too extreme, because what about the folks that are raped? What about the folks dealing with incest, which really are the same thing? I mean, if you're dealing with incest, typically that is also involving rape. And so those are terrible situations that we certainly don't want to overlook. But it is important to look at the numbers. When we look at the numbers of abortions, less than 1%, or if we're generous, about 1.3% of abortions occur because of rape and incest. But here's the thing. What you find is Planned Parenthood and other abortion organizations came out after this bill was passed. And what did they say? They said this bill allows for no exceptions. It does not allow for an exception of rape or incest. And then Planned Parenthood goes further and they bring out someone that's on their side that says they were raped and then did have an abortion. And they were saying why that abortion, having that abortion, was important to them. But here's the thing, folks. Let's be honest. Let's put all the cards on the table. If that bill in Alabama would have said we're going to outlaw abortion except for in rape and incest and life of the mother, Planned Parenthood's not tweeting out, "Thank you, Alabama, for making those exceptions. We now stand with this legislation." Of course not. They refuse to even stand with a piece of legislation that says abortion should be outlawed after 20 weeks. They refuse to stand for and stand with legislation that says if a baby survives a botched abortion, that baby deserves certain protections under our Constitution. They won't even stand for that. They'd stand and cheer for laws out of New York that say a baby should be able to be aborted throughout the 9 months of pregnancy. So let's put it all out there. Let's be honest. Let's have that conversation. It's not about the lack of exceptions in the state of Alabama. It's about the fact that anyone would dare bring a piece of legislation that restricts abortion. How dare anyone say that Roe v. Wade is not the law of the land? And so what you saw after the passing of this legislation is you saw folks come out and say, well, here's what happened. Was 25 white men gave us this law in Alabama. And it was these men, and we're going to post their pictures, these men that just hate women, and they hate everything about women's rights, and they are trying to take us back. But they failed to mention and failed to recognize that the sponsor of the bill was, in fact, a woman. They failed to recognize that the governor of Alabama is, in fact, a woman. And I find it interesting and odd that you would say that it was white men. It was men that brought us this law, that men that want to take us back. But for some reason, in 1973, it was okay that seven men in black robes gave us Roe v. Wade. So who legalized abortion? It wasn't the American people. It wasn't a piece of legislation. It wasn't an outcry from the population. It wasn't a movement that said we need this right in our Constitution. No, it was seven men. Seven men sitting on the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. Justice Blackmun, Justice Berger, Justice Douglas, Justice Brennan, Justice Stewart, Justice Marshall, Justice Powell. These are the seven men that gave us abortion. But for some reason, that's okay. That's okay. It wasn't a referendum from the populace. It wasn't an uprising from the citizenry. No. It was seven judges that dug really deep within our Constitution and somehow came out with abortion is a right. But we're not supposed to talk about that. Because when it works with your narrative, well, then let's run with it. If you want to know why I get riled up, if you want to know why I do the job that I do, because since that time, 60 million, and that's probably a conservative estimate, 60 million lives have been ended because of abortion. So the abortion lobby can bring out someone. They went through a terrible situation where she was raped and she had an abortion. And my heart goes out to anyone that would deal with that. But they'll bring them out. But they refuse to recognize those that have been raped and chose life. When I believe the numbers are somewhere around 65% of women that are raped and get pregnant choose life. They refuse to recognize the babies that come from that are walking around amongst us, that are our neighbors, that are hearing this language. People that are in foster care right now, that are looking for forever homes, that are waiting to be adopted, hearing language to say, you don't have value. Your mama should have gotten rid of you in the womb. That's what's being told to them. But I'm extreme because I want to see abortion ended. This is about dignity. This is about personhood. This is about human life, our neighbors. And so people can be angry at what Alabama did. And there's a lot of even conversation within the pro-life movement about the best way to see Roe v. Wade ended. And when we come back from the break, that's what we're going to talk about. What are the different strategies, the different avenues that some part of the pro-life movement say we need to do things like Alabama. Other parts of the pro-life movement say maybe we don't need to go all in. Maybe we don't need to put all our chips in at this point. Let's slowly see the process and see Roe v. Wade chipped away and ended. And so when we come back from the break, we'll talk about the different strategies within the pro-life movement. And this may surprise you. I'll even give you my opinion about where I think we should go. And we'll be back. So today's conversation, we're going to focus a lot on Alabama and the recent legislation that was passed and signed by the governor banning abortion there in the state of Alabama. And folks are saying, well, that's going to be caught up in the courts. Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, I saw some abortion lobbyists posting and writing over the weekend saying their goal is to outlaw abortion across the country. And I'm like, yeah, you got me. We don't hide that fact. And no pro-lifers are hiding that. Yes, just like their goal is to have abortion throughout 9 months of pregnancy. They lit up ground zero because of it in New York. And so, yeah, that all our chips are on the table. We all now know where everybody stands, and this is where the conversation needs to happen. And there was a question off air. Somebody asked, well, what happens, let's say we outlaw abortion. And first, if we overturn Roe v. Wade, what happens is it goes back to the states. So states like New York, where they've passed laws to say abortion is allowed throughout the 9 months of pregnancy, and a baby in the womb has no rights, that law is going to stand. And places like Alabama that says you cannot get an abortion in this state legally, that law will stand. So if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it doesn't outlaw abortion across the country. You'll have some politicians tell you otherwise, but it's because they either haven't read a book or they haven't read the law and they don't know, they don't understand it, which should concern us if they're running for office. But let's say that something happened and we outlawed abortion across the country. Some people will say, you're going to take us back to those days of back alley abortions with coat hangers and those type things. First off, many people argue, and again, I wasn't around back in 1973 and before, but from what I've heard from other folks and what I've read, many people argue that wasn't even a thing. It's not like there were thousands up to a million people going to back alleys and using coat hangers to perform self-abortions. They weren't doing that. Were there some cases? Sure. I'm sure there were. And it goes to personhood. If that is a life in the womb, and that's not just me saying that it's a life in the womb. That's not just me saying that it has its own heartbeat, its own DNA, its own organs, its own brain, its own fingerprints. That's not just me saying that. That's not just the gospel saying that. That's science saying that. Like, we know what's going on inside of a womb. And if that's a life, that changes everything. And our laws should be ones that protect the most vulnerable. Now, then you're going to have people say, well, yeah, that's all well and good, but then, man, we're going to have tons of kids in foster care, tons of kids in state's custody. Where are you going to find the funds for that? Well, let's take that argument further. Right now, across the country, we have a lot of people that are homeless, that are struggling, that don't have the means or resources to take care of themselves. That costs a lot of money for cities and for towns and for states. Would our argument be, well, we just need to get rid of them because they're drag on our resources. So we should just end their life. There's a lot of people right now in hospitals and nursing homes that some would argue are in a vegetative state. They're not viable on their own, even though they're older. They couldn't live on their own. Some of them couldn't live off their hospital bed, out of their wheelchair. Is the argument, well, they're a drag on society, we should get rid of them? Of course not. So this is where we are. And then within the pro-life movement, you have people saying, well, Alabama's going too far. That's going to get wrapped up in the courts. It'll never pass. It's going to make us look bad with the culture and with society, and people aren't going to come to our side when we do this. But here's where I get frustrated. So if we pass a law like Alabama, the culture is not going to like it, and they think we're too extreme. If we show images of abortion on campuses and across the country, the culture is not going to like it, and we're too extreme. If we open up pregnancy centers and we serve women at free without charging them a dime and we don't take any money from the government, well, the culture is not going to like it because they're going to say that we manipulate women and we're confusing women. So do you see what I'm saying? Like the world, culture, the abortion lobby, at no point are going to go, you know what? That's good. That's something that I can stand with. I can stand with you on that law. Open more pregnancy centers. No, they're targeting us. Like, I reach out to people and they go, wow, that's, you know, what you do is great, but that's controversial. I'm controversial? To open up our doors every day and serve women and their children in need? I mean, today one of our staff members spent pretty much the entire day trying to find housing for someone. But that's controversial. And then you have folks say, well, but we don't want to be seen as too extreme. Like, do you understand that I believe that's a living human being in the womb? An actual life. So if I'm going to be labeled extreme for wanting to protect that actual life, man, label me what you want. I don't know what else to say. And so is it frustrating that we got to spend court cost to fight some of these, to fight for some of these pieces of legislation. Yeah, it's frustrating. But I tell you this, it's worth it. It's motivating. Since my time at Hope, we have not had the type of response that we've had this year, ever. Why is that? Because of a movie like Unplanned, because of laws like out of New York and Vermont and Illinois and Virginia, and now pro-life laws out of Alabama, out of Tennessee, out of Louisiana. We have people watching and going, enough is enough. I've sat around long enough. I have to get involved in this movement. 500,000 people went to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life. 500,000. And so this is why we have to go all in. So some people say, well, look, we need an incremental change. And we had this argument back during slavery. There were some folks that said, look, yeah, slavery is horrible and we need to end it, but we're not going to be able to end it overnight. So here's what we'll do. We'll incrementally change it. We'll make it so tough for slave owners to operate that eventually it'll just go away. Trust us, it'll just go away. And then you had some folks that said, look, we can't just sit around and wait. We have to do something about it. Slavery needs to end today. Those are individual humans that are being devalued. Not just devalued, but dehumanized. What are we seeing today in the rhetoric? We're seeing people say, that's a fetus, not a baby. Why do they say that? Because they're dehumanizing the baby. Doritos played a Super Bowl ad a year and a half or 2 years ago. And it showed an ultrasound. And what did the abortion lobby come out and say? They are humanizing the fetus. It's the same argument as in slavery. They were dehumanizing actual individuals that deserve rights. And so my argument is, do we need incremental change? Absolutely. Do we need laws that restrict and make it more difficult for abortions to take place? Yes. Do we need laws that are going to make it more difficult for abortion clinics to operate? Absolutely. Do we need laws that say after 20 weeks, abortion is banned? Absolutely. Do we need laws that protect pregnant women if they're attacked or if they have a car wreck and someone hits them while driving drunk? Do we need laws that protect them and the baby? Absolutely. Do we need laws like Alabama just passed last week? Absolutely. So while we're doing the incremental change from a legislative standpoint, we also need to be doing the all-in change from a legislative standpoint. To the point where culture and society and the justice system goes, we have to address this. We have to address this. But guess what, folks? If they address it and it's overturned, it's not like we just go, okay, our work here is done. Close up Hope Resource Center. All the pro-life organizations, stop doing what you're doing. We don't have nothing else to do. Well, no, of course not. And so when we come back, I want to address the myth of, well, pro-lifers, all you care about is baby. You don't care about the mom. You don't care about anything about after the baby is here. Even after Alabama passed this law, what did we hear? We heard all Alabama cares about is that baby. But what are they doing for those kids in state's custody? What are they doing for those kids in the foster system? What are they doing for those moms that need help and need resources? When we come back, I'm going to tell you what Alabama has been doing and what other states have been doing. And it might surprise you. And it only surprised you if you haven't been paying attention. But the pro-life movement is very much engaged and involved. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm the lamb that was slain, and my blood washes you clean. I'm the pure sacrifice. Let my life give you life. I'm the lamb. So the the big myth that's often discussed and thrown about is, well, all pro-lifers care about is the baby. They don't care about the mom. They don't care about the struggles, the obstacles that are in the life of this mom. All they care about is baby. First, I would say, if that were true, here's the thing. I'm not gonna apologize for being pro-baby. I believe that's a life. My wife has been pregnant 5 times. I was pro-baby in every one of those scenarios. Every single one. I was also pro my wife in every single one of those scenarios. And after our first pregnancy and the second pregnancy came and we had a miscarriage, that was an actual life that was lost. Okay? And saying, well, 1 in 4 women experience miscarriage. Okay. That doesn't change the fact that that was a life that was lost. But let's deal with that myth. So a lot of people said, clearly Alabama is wanting to set women back a generation. They don't care about women. And in saying that, you are acting as if there are no pro-life women. Well, I work at Hope Resource Center. It's a pro-life organization. We have 14 staff members. Do you know how many are women? 13. You know, the 500,000 people that went to the March for Life, I would argue, I don't know, 75% of those were women. Jenny Mancini, the president of March for Life, guess what? She's a woman. When I go to pregnancy center conferences, the vast majority of the folks there, women. So to argue that this is a men trying to do something is just laughable and not true. But here's another argument is, well, if y'all would just foster and adopt, then maybe we could see what you're saying, but you're not doing that. Well, let's look at a recent article that was published. A record number of children from Alabama's foster care system found permanent homes during the 2018 fiscal year. There were 710 foster children adopted during the year that ended September 30th, up from 509 in fiscal year 17 and 502 in 2016. The previous record was 676 foster children adopted in fiscal year 2009, according to the Alabama Department of Human Resources, which oversees the foster care system. It sends a strong and wonderful message to all the foster care children in our state, said the governor. There are 6,375 children in foster care in Alabama. 70% of foster children return to their biological families. But those that don't, they need their own loving, caring, permanent family, and that's what it's all about. Buckner said this, and she's the commissioner of DHR there in Alabama. She said, there were probably about 250 children in the system in need of adoption for whom DHR has not found an adoptive resource. Those are children whose parents have lost their parental rights. The number of children in that situation has been fairly stable at 234 at the end of fiscal year 2016 and 236 at the end of 2015. And so I say that to say, look, folks are fostering, they are adopting. We need to get to a place where we're at least willing to tell the truth when we have these discussions and debates. And the problem, it seems, is that a lot of folks don't want to tell the truth. And they don't want to talk about it in the proper context. And so just today, there's a piece in the New York Times. And I don't know if you're a frequent reader of the New York Times or not. But it's from an OB, and the opinion piece is, the headline is, Pregnancy Kills, Abortion Saves Lives. And then the author of this piece goes further and says, look, having babies is dangerous. The mortality rate is in African Americans is higher than in other races, and we see some women die in pregnancy. That's true, and that's terrible. And we need to do whatever we can to see that ended. But the answer isn't, We need to get rid of those kids in the womb. It's the same thing when you saw, I believe it was Iceland, come out and say, we have ended Down syndrome. And when I first read that, I thought, wow, they are setting the example for the rest of the world. What have they done that we haven't caught on to? They have ended Down syndrome. You know what they were doing? They were running tests on the baby in the womb, and if that baby had Down syndrome, they were aborting that child. So they literally were ending lives and then saying, we have ended Down syndrome. Well, that's not how it works. And so to argue that pregnancy kills and abortion saves lives isn't factual. The actual goal of every single abortion, hear this, the actual goal of every single abortion is to end a individual, unique human life. That might make some people uncomfortable. That's the goal. Regardless of the scenario, regardless of how someone became pregnant, the goal of every single abortion is to end the life of a unique individual. When someone comes up to you and they say, I'm pregnant, I'm 6 weeks pregnant, I'm 18 weeks pregnant, I'm 20 weeks pregnant, do you look at them and go, why are you happy? You just have like a blob of cells inside of you. What are we doing? Why are we having a shower? Why are we having a gender reveal party? What is this even about? You know that's not a person until you have him. And frankly, it's not a person until you walk out of the hospital with it. Till it's viable. Why are we even celebrating? Of course you don't say that, because that would make you a crazy person. But when you read things like this, this is where we are. This is where we find some miscommunication and untruths. To argue that abortion uniformly saves lives is completely false. It's just not true. And so this is where we are as a society, that the New York Times is saying, you know, on the opinion page, and I think it was interesting when they posted that, in the writing, they said some abortions can save lives and some pregnancies can end life. Well, that's a true statement. But the headline says pregnancy kills and abortion saves lives. That's not true. And so it's pretty simple. When people say Roe v. Wade's the law of the land, when people say, Cory Booker said today, Roe v. Wade should be the law of the land. Well, I would tell Cory Booker, who's running for president, it currently is. So I'm not sure why you're saying it should be. I mean, it currently is, but I would argue humans should be protected while in the womb. It's that simple. Now it's up to us, a community of neighbors. Probably if you're listening to this show, the church, it's up to the church to step in and help. It's up to us to foster and to adopt. It's up to us to step in for these young ladies facing unplanned pregnancies. But people acting as if, I saw somebody put out a message over the weekend that said, what have pro-lifers done for single moms lately? And then they said, I'll wait. They've had over 10,000 comments of people saying, well, I took a single mom in and gave her a place to stay. Or I donate to my local pregnancy center. You see, here's the thing. If you think pro-lifers only care about baby, you haven't been paying attention. And really, if the media has been covering the March for Life in Washington since 1973, if they've been covering that appropriately, none of this would be a surprise to people. There are close to 3,000 pregnancy centers operating in this country that get up every day to love on and care for single moms, married moms, moms facing addiction, moms facing rape, moms facing incest, moms facing abuse. So forgive me if I get offended when you act as if we don't care. Because frankly, we've cared longer than you've been on the planet. for many of these millennials making the argument. And so we've looked at this issue from every angle. And it comes down to that's a life that deserves protection. And guess what? That mom's life deserves protection. We can protect both. We can stand with both. And I get it. A lot of the conversation that has occurred over the last week has brought up a lot of hurt and anger and bitterness and of some past mistakes, some past choices. But how are we going to move forward? And we don't move forward by lying and not being rational and not talking logic when it comes to these situations. And so that's where we are. We'll be back. You're my courage when I worry in the dead of night. You're my strength because I'm not strong enough to win this fight. You are greater than the battle raging in my mind. I will trust you, Lord. I will fear no more. I will lift my... So hopefully today has been eye-opening for some of you. Maybe you didn't even know that a law in Alabama had been passed. Maybe you're thinking, why is this dude yelling in my speakers? And I don't know what you're thinking, but hopefully it has helped kind of walk through thoughts and opinions and what's being said and what's true and what's not true. And look, I'm not expecting you to listen and go and just take everything I say at face value. You should read some of this stuff, look into it yourself, and form an opinion. What I would say as a Christian, as a church, if we're listening to this, we do have a responsibility when it comes to this issue. We do. And so we are not, this is not something that we should just sit back and go, look, that's a controversial issue, that's a political issue, that's something I can't get involved in. Look, if everything about politics angers you and bothers you, that's fine. Go volunteer at a pregnancy center. Go help a single mom. Go foster a child. Go adopt a child. Go out and say, look, I'm not at a place to do that, but what I can do is help families that are already fostering. Help families that are already adopting. We have over 70 baby showers at Hope every single year. Maybe you want to say, look, I just want to buy a car seat for one of those moms. I just want to buy a diaper bag for one of those moms. Maybe you're listening to this and there's a past choice or decision that haunts you. And you haven't been able to shake it. I would encourage you first to reach out to a place like Deeper Still and find healing in that. But second, I would say maybe, just maybe, the Lord is wanting you to share your story with some other young lady that's going through the same thing. Maybe you're a dude out there listening and you're going, look, I drove someone to an abortion clinic years ago and it still haunts me to this day. Well, I would say get some healing in that, and then maybe your story needs to be told. Maybe a conversation needs to happen. Because listen, look, I get riled up and worked up when it comes to these pieces of legislation out of different states and legislation coming out of the state of Tennessee. Look, I make phone calls, I send texts, I send emails, I send letters, I do all of that. But if all those avenues were gone tomorrow, if all my contacts were gone tomorrow, I could still get up, I could still go to Hope Resource Center, and I could help with the work that we're doing there. I could still help my neighbor. There are still things that you can do. So when we argue that this is a political issue, that's part of it. It is part of it. Look, slavery back in the day, part of it was certainly a political issue. But it also was a heart issue, a culture issue, a gospel issue. And I believe that generations from now are going to look back at this time and go, what were you doing? My grandkids will look at me one day and go, what was going on in 2019 that you even had to have a conversation about whether that's a life in the womb or not? And so we have work to do. But the way we get there and the way we see a culture change is by standing up and loving our neighbor, serving well, doing the things that we've been called to do, and not just giving lip service to this, not simply saying I'm pro-life, not simply sticking a bumper sticker on your car, but actually doing something about it. And if you want to partner with us in Hope in doing that, you can at investinghope.com. We'll talk to you next week.